Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Andy Shea. Andy, how are we doing? Did you have a good 4th of July weekend?
I did. I played a ton of golf. That's what I did. All I did was play golf. It was just my wife and I. Nice, you know, sort of retired, quiet weekend. No family, kids, nothing, you know, not adult kids, but no neighbor plans, nobody else inviting us anywhere on July 4th. I mean, you know, we had those horrific storms down here in central Pennsylvania, but I was done playing golf and just hanging out at the pool when they were like, it might storm. And we were like, all right, let's get out of here. But literally played golf the entire weekend, like 4 days in a row, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
That is like the perfect retired guy holiday weekend, Andy.
Perfect. Absolutely. Dead solid perfect.
All right. Let's get moving on here. I had another topic originally planned for today, which I talked to you about, but we're going to hold off on that for another week because I think what's more prevalent right now, talked about by, you know, especially hardcore Penn State fans who are following recruiting, there are some recruiting issues, or at least things that might be an issue, okay? And that's what I want to talk to you about. Let me do the quick recap. First of all, in this past week, here are some of the things, a couple recruiting news items. One, Pennsylvania four-star wide receiver Khalil Taylor. He chose Nebraska over Penn State. This is a guy many people listed as a must-get for Penn State. He had originally committed to James Franklin, decommitted along with the rest of the class, but it looked like he was going to commit to Matt Campbell, chose not to, ended up at Nebraska. Another item, South Carolina four-star running back Aiden Gibson. He was got a lot of people really liked. He fit the profile of a Matt Campbell running back, big, strong kid. Been committed for a while. Then Andy, not only does he choose to decommit, not only does he then choose Rutgers, he also chooses to reclassify, which means he was originally in the class of 27, meaning he had one more year of high school, would then enter school next year with the commitment of Penn State. No. He's going to commit now. Attend now this season. In another month, Andy, he's going to be on campus at Rutgers. Okay. Now, these are in addition to the loss of Jameer Dean, four-star wide receiver, after having committed. Five-star Pennsylvania running back Kamen Spell heading to Georgia. And four-star quarterback Peter Bork going to our old friend James Franklin at Virginia Tech, who he chose over Penn State. My question is, do we have a problem?
No. Short answer, no. What did you expect? I mean, I feel like for anybody younger than Generation X, which is, you know, pretty much us, Jimmy, we're in, you might be, are you a boomer?
Yes, I am.
You're a boomer. Okay, so anyone younger than a boomer or a Generation Xer, that's me, you know, in that generation, go watch Animal House and do yourself a favor. One of the greatest movies of all time, but one of the greatest lines is, remain calm, all is well. Remember the great Kevin Bacon? He was in that movie. Anyway, what did you expect? For me, this is almost sort of kind of expected because of the massive nature of this transition. What do you think they were going to do? Come in and land a top 10 class right out of the gate just because they wear Penn State golf shirts now when they go into somebody's house? No, they don't have a tangible product to sell. Massive transition is taking place at Penn State. Are they still a true blue blood? Yes, of course they are. Do they have resources and assets? Yes. But right now, in order to sort of get a product on the field and start at least putting some building blocks in place, this was kind of like they're just going to have to find their way until they have a little bit more to bring to the table. Just because you were successful at Iowa State and now your coaching staff, a good bit of your coaching staff has come along and management have come along with you to Penn State, that doesn't mean squadoosh these days. And also they've sort of established themselves as not being prepared to overpay at this particular moment. So I'd say as of July in 2026, I don't see this as problematic. Do they have top 100 players on their roster right now? Well, we talked about this. No, they do not. This is going to need to change. But right now, do they have a problem? No, I don't see it as a problem. It's not a surprise at all. It's kind of what was expected because of the nature of the transition. It wasn't like James Franklin was a three-year coach or a two-year wonder, and Penn State's had four head coaches in the last 10, 12 years. They had one coach, and it ended badly. This roster completely turned over, right? The coaching staff completely turned over. Transition doesn't happen in a minute. Transition takes time. This is, I feel, to me, is part of the transition process that, you know, they're going to have some tough sledding on the recruiting front early on. It's going to be really tough. They have a lot of things working against them. And just being Penn State isn't good enough right now. That's right now. So that's my two, you know, what I'll answer your question. Do they have a problem? No, would it be better if they landed one more of these, right? One of those, would you give me five, four, five? If they maybe got one, Jimmy, would it be any different? If they got one of the five, right? Bork, Spell, Dean, Gibson, Taylor. If they got one of those five, would it be different? No. Yes. Would it be?
It'd be better. If you just got one. It'd be better.
It would be better, but would it be any different, really? Not really, because they're not recruiting right now at a consistent blue blood level. That's why it's problematic. They're still Penn State. We're still Penn State. We can still recruit. I don't disagree with that. However, right now, there's nothing to attract a football player. There's nothing football-wise for them to sell. They're still selling the tradition in the school, but we know, Jimmy, today that's not good enough. That's only a small piece of the equation anymore. Dollars and cents, immediacy on the field, those things are much, much, much higher priority. Opportunity to play right away, et cetera. Obviously, the new rule, 5 years of eligibility, that's it, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot higher priorities than the, you know, program that we're building, the institution that it is, the school that we are. Those things still matter, but their value proposition has shrunk dramatically. They still matter, though. I don't think one player makes a difference if they got one of them. And I still say not a surprise to me at all.
All right, Andy. Before I am at a point in this show, I'm going to defend what Penn State's doing, how they're doing it, the strategy they're using, okay? But first, I'm going to play perhaps a little devil's advocate and hit on everything that you said. Any one of these examples, five examples or so that I gave you, any one of them individually, I don't have an issue with. No problem. No problem at all. You know, because each recruit is different and has different circumstances going on with them. The problem is every, you know, reason, justification for the individual one is contradicted by one of the other ones. Let me give you an example. Aiden Gibson, the running back who's reclassifying and going to Rutgers, the argument, hey, playing time. By reclassifying and going in to play this season at Penn State, there's no room in the inn at the running back position. Now, I don't know Rutgers' situation. I haven't studied their roster. I got a buddy who's a Rutgers guy. I should ask him about it. But the thing is, when you talk about getting on the field playing time, boy, that contradicts when you've lost wide receivers to Nebraska, Auburn, and Georgia. If there's a position where there might be immediate openings, it's wide receiver at Penn State, Andy.
It could be. I think with the quarterback and wide receivers they brought in, I think Penn State has sent out a subtle message of, for 2026, we know what we're going to do, and we know who's going to play for the most part. I really do. I think they've
set... But that's 26. Remember, these are 27 recruits.
I know. They have set it in. Yeah, but there's... They don't have a product to sell that's Penn State. They have a product to sell that was Iowa State, but that's not the same product. They don't have an on-field product to sell yet. They don't say, look how we use wide receivers. Look at how our offense functions with wide receivers. Look at our philosophy. What their philosophy and what they're doing at Penn State has to change, and it will change, but we got to see it, right? We got to see it at the next level. You could talk about Matt Campbell being the right guy, by the way, I think he is, and the philosophy and the program building and all that. We don't know squat douche about the product on the field at Penn State. Got to see it. Got to see the product on the field before I know. If I'm a recruit, now I'm old. We're both old. If I'm a recruit, I want to see the product on the field. End of story.
Andy, a very good argument on your side. Very good argument. You know what, though? When we come back, I'm going to shred it. I'll do that. Right after this break.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel. The first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Andy, I'm Jim. We're talking about Penn State football. Specifically the issue on recruiting, or is there an issue? And Andy,
there's not.
You talk. that's our show for
go ahead, Jimmy.
And that's our show for today. Let's wrap it up.
Right. Thank you for watching, or thank you for listening.
Andy, you know, you just mentioned one of the issues that Penn State and Matt Campbell has is, you know, they haven't demonstrated the product on the field. And, you know, that is, it is an issue. And it's going to be something that, you know, we may still see some players decommit and commit to Penn State once they do see the product in the field come fall. And boy, that schedule is set for them to get off to a fast start. And it, what we assume to be the whiteout game versus USC, there's a very good chance Penn State will go into that undefeated. that will be a huge ball game there. And boy, if they could win that game in front of a lot of recruits, they could change, you know, hearts and minds with a performance there. But with that said, the point you make about, hey, it's a new coach, they haven't put their product on the field yet. Well, guess what? You know what? Virginia Tech has the same issue. James Franklin has not put a product on the field yet at Virginia Tech. He's recruiting pretty well. Michigan, probably comparable to Penn State as far as where they are, the level that they're at, brought in a new coach under even worse circumstances with the scandals going on there. Their recruiting ranks higher than Penn State's. And oh, by the way, how about this absolute wreck of a program on the West Coast called UCLA? UCLA, talk about not having a product on the field, Andy. Guess what? UCLA's recruiting ranks higher than Penn State's.
So you picked
all
you
new coaches. Yes,
you
I
cherry
did.
Pick. UCLA, California has better football players than Pennsylvania and the Northeast. End of story. You could pick five states in the Northeast and say, you're going to get better players in California, UCLA, and start. James Franklin had a blue blood product to sell at a lower level institution. He's really good at recruiting. Makes sense. Michigan's roster did not turn over. Their roster was not ravaged. They just had an icky, yucky situation. The new coach inherited a full kitchen cupboard, right? Matt Campbell inherited a hot mess and an empty cupboard. So I think if you transfer and say James Franklin was fired and the roster, you know, wasn't upside down, you know what I mean? By upside down, I mean there was more to fill than there was there. Michigan, and you take the Michigan situation and put it Penn State, I would say that what we're talking about now, Matt Campbell's underperforming. I would totally be on board with you, Jimmy, and be like, yeah, it is. So the circumstances and some of the, you know, devil in the details of this dramatic change at Penn State that had to happen and the fallout from it. I mean, basically, they fired James Franklin and the entire recruiting class said, we're gone. And, you know, 40% of the roster said, we're out of here as well. That's okay. That didn't happen at Michigan. That happened at Penn State. So I think it's more, sometimes I think you have to look at the dramatic change, not just the change, but the dramatic change in what they inherited. And what they inherited was not, it was not clean and good. It was very, very, very upside down. So you got to start somewhere. And I think from where they started, this is not unexpected.
Here's the contradiction in the points that you're making, Andy. At Michigan, if they had more players returning and all that, well, that means less opportunity for incoming players. In that way, Penn State should be more attractive than Michigan because of the turnover. With Virginia Tech, you know, you say, oh, well, James Franklin used to coach at Blue Blood, so, but it's still the lower tier program. Penn State is the blue blood, not Virginia Tech. Matt Campbell wasn't fired. He comes in on a more positive note. But James Franklin seems to be overcoming those disadvantages. And the final one, UCLA. You're right. But by the way, did UCLA just move to California this year, Andy? No, I think they've been in California. And guess what? The recruiting's been lousy every year. The program's been lousy every year. The program's in financial straits and has been for years. But somehow, this coach, who's new, by the way, so he's not had a product on the field at UCLA, he's recruiting fine out there, Andy.
So it's taken me like a couple days and stuff to figure this out for you, the Penn State fan. You think this is a level playing field? I just figured it out. You think that Penn State's playing on a level playing field right now? They're not. They're not even close to being on a level playing field with any of those schools you mentioned. They have a problem. They have a massive mess. That doesn't mean their program's in peril or that Penn State's upside down. It just means at the moment, until they can get to the product on the field, they're climbing uphill. They're behind. It's not a level playing field, Jimmy. They're not playing despite their assets. Despite them having resources and assets, inherently, school to school, across the board, they're not playing on anything remotely close to a level playing field right now. That will change rapidly, and it will change in a hurry, especially if this team has a modicum of success, a modicum of success, and the on-field product is on display. But right now, it is a completely unlevel playing field that they're playing on. It's not a permanent thing. It's not something that you can be forecasted for the future. I don't see it that way. But I'm sitting here trying to figure out, like, why would he think like, oh, you think that, and I understand it. You're Penn State. You should think you're on a level playing field. Just understand who you are and where you're at right now. You're not going to stay there very long, but that's who you are and where you're at right now.
Here's I think, the problem with your theory there, Andy, is calling Penn State a mess when they brought in one of the most sought-after coaches in the country. They're still the blue blood that is Penn State. Correct. They're a team that's investing $800 million in their stadium alone. Okay, they're Agreed. Doing all the things the blue blood is. And you say, well, gee, you know, with the vast turnover, the place is a mess.
Not a mess. I say elements of it are a mess. UCLA
is a bigger mess than Penn State is, and they're doing better on the recruiting front. When they lose people to Georgia, I say, you know what? It's Georgia with a bigger budget, more money. And maybe it's hard to compete with them financially, but they're losing players to Nebraska. What if Matt Rule's, you know, he's got one foot out the door. If he has one more mediocre season, they lose a player to Rutgers. They're losing Jimmy. Players to Virginia Tech. Andy, you know,
Matt Campbell's not playing a short game. This isn't a sprint, Jimmy. He's not sprinting to anywhere. This is a marathon. And he is slow rolling it and playing it right now smart. He's not trying to out there trying to recruit.
Hold on. Andy, I want to address that, you know, immediate thing, this slow rolling. How if it were a question of, gee, they're investing more in high school recruits than the transfer portal, I could get that as the argument. They're doing the long play. But we're talking about high school recruits here. How in the world does it help Penn State losing a four-star running back recruit to Rutgers? How does it help them to lose an in-state four-star wide receiver to Nebraska, slow play?
It does not help them, but it's not hurting them. Right, it is not hurting them that they are losing these players. That's the difference in my mind. Would it help? I said that earlier. Yeah, it would be helpful, but it's not hurting them because while they're approaching it differently right now, they also are going to. They are also setting themselves up to change and make the bigger splash that they are. I think if you tried to think of this as a 200-meter dash and, you know, we got to recruit 4 and 5 stars, we got to have a top 15 recruiting class, we got to overspend, yada, yada, that's a crash and burn scenario. I just feel that that's a crash and burn. I think if you want to put a championship team in place, remember, it takes more than a year. Give them 1 year, and that is this first run of an offseason. Through the end of the first football season, that's it. Then it's got to change. And that's the rapid point where I say it's got to change in a hurry. It's got to change starting in December. It has to look different December, January, and February. A lot different. And I think they will recognize that as well.
Here's, I believe, the problem in that theory of, okay, in the long run. Again, if this were, a senior portal player who's only going to suit up for Penn State in the 26th season, that's short term. High school recruits right now, they are obviously zero factor in the 26th season. They would be freshmen in the 27th season, first-year players, who many first-year players don't see the field. They're not a factor until at least the second year and maybe third year. So we're talking about these guys that you're losing today. They're hurting your team in 28, 29. Andy, that's the long term. These Jimmy, recruits right now are not short-term players.
Jimmy, I said they've got 6 months. It has to change. This is the one period. This is the short term. The long term starts in December. I said 6 months from now. It's got to change dramatically. In other words, this time next year, you're giving me five players at this level, those type of recruits that are in Penn State's in on and are high on their target list. They better be landing two or three of them.
All right, that's the last word before we hit Ask Andy next.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello, and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Andy, I'm Jim. It's time for Ask Andy. And you know what's fascinating, Andy, and I sometimes get the question, but more often I will just talk about it. What's our conversation like between segments? We just kept the argument going from quarter two.
Yeah,
it never stops. So
I'm baffled.
Andy is frustrated with me right now. So
unrealistic just expectations. All right, let's take some football questions.
Or I already shredded his argument. So, well, so actually, football and football are questions too. But let's get to the. That makes you happy, doesn't it? Do you want the World Cup question first?
Yes, of course. I love. Yes, please. All right.
Henry from Morristown, New Jersey said, wanted to get your take on the U.S. World Cup performance against Belgium. How disappointing was that performance? Is that who this team is, or was it just a really bad game? I'm going to add a question because I don't know and understand the game very well, Andy. If Penn State, listen to me. If the U.S. played Belgium 10 times, how many times would the U.S. win?
Once.
Okay, so Belgium is just that much better?
Yeah, and Belgium didn't have its two of its better players. I would argue two of its four best, maybe three best players did not suit up for Belgium in that game. And they still. So to answer your question, Henry, I was not surprised. That is exactly who they are. That is who they look like in the lead-up. Remember, it was brought up, but it was kind of brushed under because there was a lot of euphoria. They played Belgium in March, basically, you know, and they got gobsmacked, right? They lost 5-2. And I watched that game, and I'm like, yeah, this team's nowhere, not even close. Give the U.S. team credit. I thought they would struggle to get out of the group, to be honest with you, because they were playing, their form was that poor coming in. They came together and overperformed. They overperformed. They played their best game against Bosnia and Herzegovina in the round of 32. That was their best, most complete performance. They played outstanding. They picked up some momentum early in the tournament. Overperformed in the round of 32 game and had literally a perfect game. And then when it came to the next level, which the round of 16, obviously, but it is a completely different level because pretty much every team is in the top 15. The USA was not ranked in the top 15 coming into this. That's who they are. They're weak in the back. Their goaltending is not very good. And Belgium exposed it ad nauseum. And they couldn't cover it up front because they were tentative. And they played poorly up front. They played well below expectations up front. In the back and goaltending, that's exactly who they are. And the result was right. It was... I thought they overachieved by getting to the round of 16, and I was happy to see it, but they are exactly who they are, and they're still nowhere close to being a player on the biggest stage in the World Cup. Nowhere close.
All right, I'm not going to add anything to it because I have no idea what I'm talking about. On most topics, that usually doesn't stop me, Andy, but anyway, here's a question I like. Matt from Massachusetts says, Jim and Andy, hope you both had a relaxing and tried to stay cool 4th of July. I think we can agree that nothing tops a great matchup between rivals, which makes
between
an exciting...
What? I'm sorry.
Rivals. Rivals.
Oh, rivals. Yes. Okay, sorry, I didn't catch that.
Which makes an exciting rivalry? A rivalry with rich history or a rivalry made competitive by different teams in the previous season? I'm going to expand the question, make it more just the general. What makes a good rivalry?
Geography, familiarity, kinship. In other words, there's you know each other, right? Like you're possibly Penn State and Pitt, perfect, right? Like Pennsylvania. Both teams, you know, kind of looking for some of the same best player. That's geography, kinship, you know, borderline, healthy despise for each other. And I'm sure some people might view it as unhealthy. I kind of see it as like, yeah, I kind of like it when Penn State fans, you know, hate the crap out of Pitt. And when Pitt fans that I know hate the crap out of Penn State, it's kind of cool. That kind of, you know, healthy despise for each other and results that are unexpected only add fuel to the fire, right? Like a team that's 2-8 beats the team that's 8-2, right? 2 years ago, you're going to ride that coattail, right? Like stuff like that. More the unexpected adds an extra dimension to it, but those are my baseline things for a strong rivalry. And it's always good if they have a name to the game, especially if it's a cool name, you know, like the Iron Spike Bowl or something like that. You know what I mean? Like a cool name always helps for the rivalry. Not, you know, that's just a bonus from on my front. I always like name games, but those are that's my criteria for a cool rivalry.
Andy, what for you, who is your team that you root for that has the biggest rival or the rival that you hate the most?
The New Orleans. I'm a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan. I freaking hate the Saints. I hate the New Orleans Saints. They're in the division. B, you know, they've owned my team pretty much. They beat the crap out of us. Even when we're good, they beat the crap out of us. One time they beat us like 41-10 with Tom Brady as a quarterback. And I was like, that's the only lay an egg game. I'm like, lay an egg against anybody else, not the freaking Saints. And look, I hate every team in my division, rival team in my division, but that's for cause. But I can't stand the door. I won't go to the game with my brother down there. He's a season ticket holder. I won't go. Because I hate their fan. I just like, I don't want to be in the building with them. I went once and I was like, I will never do this again because it just was not healthy for me. So that tells you the level of loathe I have for that particular National Football League. When they lose, I don't care who wins and loses on Sundays. I just always root for whoever's playing the Saints. I just want my Bucks to win and the Saints to lose. Everything else is window dressing.
Do you know what, Andy? What I love about that answer, and it's the reason why I asked you the question, is we always get aloof, Andy. Well, I'm not a fan of Penn State college football. I'm just generalist. I love college football, the game. No rooting interest. No emotion. Cold, calculating. And we just heard salty Andy.
Yeah, I brought it to the football arena. I'm a Flyers fan, and don't even get me started on the Penguins. I don't know which is worse, the Saints or the Penguins. Might be the Penguins, but I kept it football. I can't stand the New Orleans Saints.
See, Andy, that is what makes sports great and why I like this question from Matt. And you brought up Pitt. If you're a Penn State fan, you got to hate Pitt. And then you just have things to add to it. Like, if you went to any fan forum where you saw, you know, the things that they were saying during the Penn State scandal with Sandusky, every time Pat Narduzzi opens his mouth, right, I dislike that man more. Okay, and to me, and James Franklin had a lot of things that I appreciated. I thought were very good, but perhaps what I liked best about him was it was obvious he did not like Pat Narduzzi. It was obvious.
It was obvious. Yeah.
That's a rivalry, okay? When you have that kind of dislike, and especially if there's a moment that gets created, you know, like those Maryland jackasses who refuse to shake hands with Penn State
before. Yeah, that's gimmicky. That's Bush League. That's not rivalry. That's Bush League crap.
But it makes you dislike. All right, let's make sure we hit another question. Let's see. All right, let's go to Chris in New York, who says, "Hey, Andy, do you have a favorite to win the national championship? Feels like it's a wide open field."
I do think it's wide open. It's the parity thing that is the unexpected from all of this change in college football that I find myself gravitating to. Okay, don't shoot me, anybody. I think Texas might have the best roster, but we all know who their coach is, right? Like, I think that to me is problematic. Do I think Indiana can do it again? No, but would it surprise me if Indiana's knocking at the door or possibly doing it again? No. That guy's figured this new formula out faster than anybody. Yes. So don't sell him short. I think Texas has the best roster. So if you're going to ask me to pick one school, because I'm going to keep it simple and not muddy the water, despite Steve Sarkisian and his inability to perform at another level on some of the bigger stages on with any consistency, Texas.
I'm going to go with Ohio State.
Yeah, and I get it.
I know it's, you know, chalk, you know.
Chalk all the way.
Every year there's an argument that they have the best roster. Every year there's that argument. It may be a little less so now in the age of, you know, NIL, you know, compensation to the players, transfer portal and all. But they also have something else, Andy. They have stars, okay? And I think sometimes Julian Sain is among the best quarterbacks in the country.
Correct.
They've got the best player in the country in Jeremiah Smith. Guy's incredible.
Yep.
Got a stud running back.
They had a young defense last year that got better.
But they also lost a lot of players to the draft on defense, but they just reload. Okay. So they've got talent and they've also got some star players, the great running back, Bo Jackson. They always have the best talent or near.
I'll give you a sneaky deep cut. A Miami, USC.
Very good. All right, Andy, that's it for Ask Andy. We got more to talk about. Come quarter four, stick with us.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Andy. I'm Jim. We're talking back to talking Penn State football. Andy, we've been talking, debating, arguing. You know, are there concerns with Penn State's recruiting class? Your final thought on it all was that, hey, don't expect too much from Penn State right now. There were issues, a mess that Matt Campbell inherited. He's dealing with that. I'm not sure about that being a legitimate argument because I think you could argue, you know, other teams have bigger issues to deal with, but I'm now going to, Andy, kind of jump sides a little bit and take the other side of the argument. And I guess this is reframing the question a little bit because I think this is part of what's happening with Penn State in their recruiting. The common theme through these players, this, you know, I gave five situations where they lost out on players. And, you know, the Khalil Taylor, Aiden Gibson, Jameer Dean came in spell, Peter Bork. And the common thread with these players is that they either were committed to Penn State, close to committed. Several of them have also had a situation where they were not quite as highly regarded. You know, Jameer Dean, Aiden Gibson, they are now more highly regarded than when they first committed to Penn State, okay? Which I think created a bit of a bidding war. And it feels like Penn State is losing on these players when they get in bidding wars. I think Rutgers with the running back, they just came out and said, you know what? We're committing. We're overcommitting. We're going to pay the price for this kid. And Penn State, and, you know, we could say the same thing about Khalil Taylor in Nebraska. I think this is a case where those teams, even though they may not have the same budget that Penn State has, they thought, here's an opportunity for us to bring in a high-level player, and we're going to do what it takes, even though it means overpaying to bring them in. And Penn State, it feels like, they're sticking to their guns. They're sticking to their budget. They're placing a value on players, and that's where they're going to stay.
That's a smart place to stay for now. That is where they need to be now. They can enter the season, which they will, without a top 100 player in college football on their roster and still put a product on the field. But it's only short term, Jimmy. It's just for this season. And I'm not saying that they're going to have to change dramatically. I think the coaching staff and their philosophy and their evaluation process, I don't think their evaluation process will change. I think they'll still value a certain type of player that they know fits their mold. And there's huge upside to that, but I think they have to creep outside of that comfort zone and start throwing a little bit of caution to the wind sooner than later, aka December. They might have to
interrupt you for a second. I apologize for interrupting, but you keep saying they need to change come December. Now December right. is when the commitment date is for these 27 recruits.
Right.
You keep choosing December as your line of demarcation. Correct. Why is that?
Because you have a product to sell because you've put a product on the field for a season and you have the resources to go to put your ring back in the hat at a higher ticket price. In other words, you can start moving your muscle a little bit. You know what I mean? Flexing it. Like, look, this
are
is
you
who
still
we are,
talking
what we
about
got.
The
are you
27
sure you're not
commits?
Interested in us
okay.
for 500,000 more or 250,000 more than you were willing to pay at, say, Rutgers or Nebraska or wherever the heck somebody else went, right? Are you sure you don't want to give us another look? Because this is what we're willing to do now. Right now, they don't have any top 100 players on their roster, whether it's through the transfer portal, late stage recruiting, flexing their muscle a little bit. Somehow they have to enter spring camp or at least be, you know, have some chalk on the board. Going into the 27th season, you need to have five, six, seven, you know, five. Five's a good number. I think this program will need to have five top 100 players on its roster, maybe top 150 going into the 27th season. In other words, this is functional and makes sense right now. It's not functional and it doesn't make sense going into spring ball next year. It won't work. It won't work long-term at a championship level at a blue blood institution.
Andy, I mentioned earlier in this show I was going to flip sides and flip my argument, and I'm going to do it right now, and I'm going to give an example of it. I threw Peter Bork, the quarterback, the four-star quarterback recruit, who chose Virginia Tech over Penn State and Georgia as an example. I think for James Franklin, he felt that was flexing his recruiting muscle.
Sure, 100%
agree. He gets to say, I beat out Penn State, I beat out Georgia, two blue bloods for this kid.
Me. Maybe, yeah, he thinks Virginia Tech's a blue blood. He's wrong.
But if he overpaid, there's a logic to it just to Correct. Show that we belong on the playing field. By Correct. Playing field, I mean recruiting playing field with those blue bloods. And I think the Penn State recruiting is discipline that they weren't going to go over for this kid. And not that they didn't like him, because they did, but that they said, you know what? Over here we have a kid who's a three-star named Will Wood, who we either like as much, maybe we even like a little more, maybe we like a little less. But we can't justify paying that much more to the four-star when we think this three-star is almost as good. If we're going to save, you know, throw $1 million in the process and could go get another offensive lineman, it's worth it to do that. That we're using, you know, we're not using our heart and our emotion and trying to win the recruit. We're being smart and fiscally responsible to also be able to spend that money elsewhere.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with you. The way I see this is like, I'll Americanize it. It's like building a pizza, right? It doesn't matter what toppings you have to put on it. First, you got to make your dough and you got to roll it out. And then you got to throw it in the air. You got to put your sauce and cheese on it, right? That is what they're doing. That is what I see them building right now. They're just building their base. They're going to need to start putting some toppings on it and a bunch of them in the very near future. And that's why I'm perfectly okay with, you know, they're not going to jump in the crazy arena because that's putting toppings on it. They're not there yet. They're not ready to go there yet. They're going to need to go there soon. That's the sort of shift that I think this coaching staff is like. Right now they had to sort of, they walked into an empty pizza shop. We got to build it somehow. This is how we're going to start it, because this is what we know. And this is what we know we can do well. That will not be good enough a year from now. That will be nowhere near good enough a year from now. That is my counter argument to my own point is, yeah, I understand what they're doing now. But it ain't going to fly a year from now on my front, because at the end of the day, you need some of the best players in order to be one of the best teams. You can't always make chicken salad out of, you know, chicken you know what. So they're going to need to shift as a staff and as a sort of mentality that we are willing to enter the arena. They're going to walk in.
I agree with that sentiment, and I think that's where do they have to say, okay, we've got to stop being just logical and, you know, we win this from a fiscally responsible battle, but being fiscally responsible doesn't win national championships.
Doesn't get you in the playoffs.
Right. So, you know, looking at the running back position, now, Kinsell, from everything I hear, is a very special running back, you know, and maybe there's a time when you make that investment, but I got the feeling they said, you know what, this Aiden Gibson, before everybody realized how good he was, Penn State realized it, brought him in, felt really good about this kid. What's a bit worrisome to me is when he raised his profile, became much more highly regarded, it's the same story we saw with Jameer Dean, you know. Oh, now a higher profile, they get picked off by somebody else. You know, at what point do you have to stop being fiscally responsible and put your chips on the table, Andy, and say we're all in? Because, you know, this, maybe where is that position? Quarterback is the logical one. And, you know, hey, Peter Bork is a good quarterback. Then maybe we just don't think he's a generational quarterback. You know, if we're going to put all our chips in on a quarterback, you know, maybe it's the 4-star kid, Pennsylvania kid, that for the 28 season that they just got as a commitment, Andy.
Yeah, the way I feel that Matt set the table, this is exactly how I expected it to look. And that's why I've chosen December. That's when you got to start putting your chips all in, or as I like to say, they've got to enter the ring and say, okay, George is countered. We have the resources. We need to protect what we think is the asset that we want. And I think they need to do that's, I think December, January, and February of next year are the time that I think they need to shift.
I'm going to give you a different date, Andy. I'm going to give you October 10th. Now you ask, why, Jim? Why October 10th?
Why October 10th, Jim? Why?
Whiteout game versus USC. I think you will get special players on your sideline for that game. And I hope I got the right date. I think it's October 10th. But,
what if they lose that game and underperform? So they have to win. I'm talking inherently. Not based on a one-hit wonder. I agree with you that's
an opportunity. It's an opportunity, yes.
It's a great opportunity. I'm looking at it more bigger picture as an inherent structural part of their program. It needs to change in December, January, February.
All right, Andy, we'll make that the last word. And as usual, after we go through a whole show of debating, we end up pretty close to being on the same path there. That is it for the show. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.